You got to do the intro. So
I can't remember what I did last time for
Vidtober. We did Vidtober like 2 years ago, so I don't know.
Oh, God. 2 years ago?
Yeah. Jesus. I don't think we did Vidtober last year, right? We did something else.
I don't remember what we did last
year. I don't remember last week, let alone 2 years ago.
Is this part of the song, like when the songs have talking in the beginning? Is this part of the
Yeah.
All the B-sides are just me going, what did I do last time?
It's like a later Sugar Cube song. It's just a lot of talking.
A lot.
I don't remember what we did last time. So I don't think it matters what you did last time, because it was a while ago.
Oh,
so do whatever you would like.
Nothing matters anymore. Great, I'm ready. 2, 3, 4. Nothing fucking matters anymore. Nothing fucking matters. Doesn't matter what you did last time, because you can always rewind. Be kind, rewind. Vidtober. Vidtober. Vidtober, adjust the tracking. Vidtober. Music.
Thought to be hanged and burnt over a basket of living cats.
Hey everybody, welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan, with me as always is Mark.
You guys want to check out my plans for an ice castle?
And Erica.
Get out of my backyard. You're not welcome here. Also, you're cute. But get out of my backyard. Don't follow me. You're not welcome here. You're cute.
And welcome to Vidtober 2, where we once again celebrate the movies released by New World Video, only this time we're focusing only on Canadian films. And joining us for this incredible slice of Quebec life, he is the host of the VHS podcast, Dirk Marshall, returning to the show. Welcome, Dirk.
Thank you.
Well done.
I feel like sometimes when you talk about Canadian movies, you need to bring in somebody from Portland. I feel like you're a lot closer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Actually, technically, Mark is probably closer than all of us to Canada, but still, we have you both.
Yeah.
I felt like this was when I had you cover, it started here on this podcast when we covered a children's film that was bizarre. And then I was like, Ryan only watches bizarre children's movies. He'll be on my podcast to do such things. So now you have me for Canadian films, I guess, is what's happening.
Yeah. We had you last time for Nick Knight, which was shot in Canada at the very least. And now we're having you back for 1984's The Dog Who Stopped the War.
Well, do you want to fight this war or not?
That's right. 1984 is The Dog Who Stopped the War, brought to you by the Juvenile Building Company. No job is too big for our little builders, whether it's a snow castle or a three-floor live workspace with an underground garage. You can trust the engineering know-how of our staff, who are all, on average, 11 years old. There is nothing the Juvenile Building Company can't build, with only minor crumbling. Call today.
And they can do it so fast.
So fast.
Efficient.
They did it like
amazing.
Like an afternoon, they could build it. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they didn't even have like the larger group as far as the two groups goes. No, they had the smaller
four
group
of them. It looked like it was an Adobe building. It was so constructed.
And the kid who designed it was clearly not going to do any of the actual work. He was just going to get everybody pumped up to build.
He was the architect sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is directed by André Melançon, who had directed the 1978 Canadian kids film The Backstreet Six, which we all know and love. And he had a history in films for children. So one of the film's writers, Roger Canton, had suggested Melançon to the film's producer, Roch Demers, who, if that sounds familiar, it's because he was the producer of the Tales for All series of films, of which The Great Land of Small is a part.
Life is like a dream. In the great land of small, I won't be able to think of anything else.
That's it. That's all you need to remember. Now, Dirk joined us for that episode. And now you can hear our track in the Canadian International Pictures Blu-ray release of that movie. So now you know why I invited you here, Dirk.
Yes.
Because we have to continue the Tales for All as
That's
well.
That's right.
This isn't out on Blu-ray, is it?
Oh, friend.
Oh, it is.
We're too late. So maybe the 4K we could get on 4K.
Yeah.
When they upgrade to this to 4K, which absolutely. This is the very first of the Tales for All series, which was produced by Demers' company, Les Productions Lafitte, which was supposed to only be 12 films total at the time he started the series, but has grown to 27 films total and is still going strong to this day.
Wow.
Will we be talking about more of these movies? Yes.
No. Oh.
Definitely The Peanut Butter Solution, for sure. Yes. And I think maybe two more. I think there's maybe two other ones as well.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That was a very poorly formed contract to have it continue this long.
Yeah.
Like someone's on the hook. Like, I thought we were only going to make 12. How am I still supporting all these movies?
Well,
I am so upside down on this deal. I don't know what to do.
I will say that Roch Demers, who has passed on, he sold the company at some point, like maybe 10 years ago. So it is literally somebody else with the same company making these Tales for All films.
I thought it was just a Canadian 12 and that was like an American 14. So that's what we were.
It was an American 27. A Canadian 12 is an American 27. I think that's all. We all know.
Yeah.
Right. It's the metric system.
It's the metric system. It screws everybody up. Yes. Mm. Now these are kids' films. However, Demers told the Evansville Courier Press in December 1985, he said that he, quote, does not produce children's films. I make childhood films which draw the experience of childhood for anyone to understand and appreciate.
And the Evansville Courier and Press was like, whatever, print it. Let's go. Okie dokie.
I don't know. It looks like a kid's film to me, but whatever, man.
I don't know, man. When's the next Days of Thunder?
You're going to make another Days of Thunder?
Yeah, man. From
no, that's a kid's film.
What's on the first page of the entertainment section? Because we're going to knock that off. We've made Indiana part of the South. It doesn't make any sense. Anyway, the point, Demers said, of the films were to be a counterpoint to movies like Gremlins, which some parents may find, this is his quote, very sick or violent, end quote.
Yeah.
Well, it was supposed to be even more violent than it is.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. That was probably the Canadian bar at this time was like, do your parents let you watch The Dog Who Stopped the War? Yeah? Did let you watch Gremlins? No. Get the fuck out. You're not welcome on my party. This is a Gremlins party, you square.
Well,
ironically, conversely, if you're a parent, this movie was the basis of, you know, what kind of parent are you? Are you a parent that lets your kid watch The Dog Who Stopped the War or, say, Poltergeist? But yeah. I would say the parents in Poltergeist actually cared about their children, while the parents in The Dog Who Stopped the War don't give a fuck what the kids do all winter long.
Because it's a sad-ass ending.
They are somewhat, at least, managing the laundry. Yes. And they are driving their kids places. So they are participating in that much. And they are raising the younger sibling.
Ryan's like, they're taking them to the movies. They're doing everything right.
Right.
We're taking them to a movie theater.
What's funny about comparing this to Gremlins, though, is that this one has the much sadder and darker ending.
Yes.
Of the two movies. It may not be sick and violent, I guess, but it definitely has the darker ending.
It is sick and violent.
I found it really funny.
The ending or the movie? Because the movie, I can understand.
The ending, and we'll get to why. But
okay. Oh my gosh!
Okay.
But I also hadn't seen this before. So as I watched this, I was constantly being like, is that how the dog stops the war? Like, I really didn't know. Every single little turn, I was like, this is probably how the dog... And then the film introduces things, and I'm like, whoa, that's dark. Is that how it's gonna? But no. And then, wow. By the time it gets to the end, man. This is a thrill ride for the ages, I'm telling you.
I don't think any of us had seen this before, correct?
Correct.
Mark, is this one of your favorites? Oh, okay.
Why?
You didn't respond, so I don't know.
I was in shock by that question.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, none of us grew up in Quebec, so, you know, this wasn't a movie we grew up on.
I suspect people even in Quebec are like, that movie was from here?
Mm-hmm. No, Mark. Absolutely.
Do you think they're legally obligated to see every movie that's made in Quebec?
This movie, well, we'll get to it, but this movie was hugely popular, and it is an instrumental movie to people, not only in Canada, but certainly people from Quebec. This is like a huge movie to them. So this is Canada's Goonies, essentially.
Okay.
Yeah. Here's where you can watch The Dog Who Stopped the War. It is, I hate to point you to YouTube, but that's about the only place where you can stream it. You might be able to rent it from iTunes, but that was about it. Or you can buy the Canadian International Pictures Blu-ray, as I have done. And you can watch it again and again, plus a feature-length documentary as well.
Wow.
About the cast.
How was it?
Did you say documentary?
I wish I had.
Am I on it though? Am I on that release?
You're on the documentary, yes.
Yes.
It was a trip to see you in it and prominently featured.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm in most documentaries.
You are. It's somehow, I don't know how you get in there. Let's talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is The Dog Who Stopped the War about?
It's, I feel like this movie is really about, you know, showing kids that you're going to face a lot of challenges in life. And it can start at a very young age. And one of those challenges is deciding what to bring to show and tell. And I get it. It can be nerve-wracking. It can be hard. You know, you're getting up in front of the class where judgment is going to be bestowed upon you depending on what you brought, something cool, something lame. And so it's understandable to have nerves. But remember, when you get up there, remember, no matter what you bring up there, no one gives a shit.
Especially the teacher, who has made sure that this show and tell is on the last day before break at the tail end of the day.
Yes.
So you have to keep it short. Because she is squeezing this in.
She was phoning
it light.
She was like, TikTok, I need to get to Orlando, Florida on the next flight out of Quebecois. Okay?
Right.
I'm out of toi of Quebecois.
She's Ottawa out of Quebecois. All right.
Oh boy.
Dirk, what is this movie about?
Oh, this is about how barns are utility buildings, and just when you think you've exhausted all their uses, there's just one more.
Oh, yes. Whose barn is that? Because there is a surprise inside barn. Now.
Yeah.
It is. All the kids are like, this is our place, but it is actually someone's property. Like, in reality,
right. Someone's paying property taxes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Somebody owns that land, but oh, boy.
Yeah.
Don't start digging around, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Erica, what is this movie about?
How did those kids move that slab of concrete? That's what I want to know, because they moved that slab and then they closed that slab.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, also, that's not what this movie is about.
If you do start digging around and you hit about a 2-inch layer of orzo pasta, stop digging.
Stop.
Okay?
Yeah, stop. You found the smell.
I think you were giving them a lot of credit. I think that was rice. You're giving them a lot of culinary credit.
In the spring thaw, the smell is, spoiler alert.
Don't.
And orzo.
I said spoiler alert.
And orzo.
You said spoiler alert right before you spoiled the whole thing.
Cut that out then.
The only thing more spoiled is that rice.
Oh my gosh. Oh. Did you say what the movie was about?
No.
Okay.
And I won't. I never tell. It's my secret.
Erica, what is this movie about?
I don't know. But I'll tell you what, when I was watching it, all I could think about was, like, which kid would I be in this?
Mm.
And honestly, I don't know for sure, because I definitely can relate to the kid who brought the bugle for show and tell, of bringing something that people are going to be like, boo, stupid. Like, yeah, definitely was that kid. Yeah. Who was like, oh, what? Like, what do you mean this glass carving of a dog is lame? I like dogs. I brought it for all to see.
I was going to save this for later, but I actually remember a show and tell in elementary school. And I brought my glass cat collection.
Dirk, we would have been such good friends.
And that's one of the earliest times I realized that I was weird, because nobody cared. Like, everyone was just like,
Oh my God, of course,
that's so Dirk. He brings this thing. None of us, our grandmas would care about this.
I would have loved to see that, because one time I brought, and I probably have it under my bed, I brought this little, it wasn't glass. It's like made out of stone or something, like granite, like a dog carved out of stone. Yes. And that's what I brought, and because it was like one of my proudest belongings, like I loved it.
Like, yeah, my daughter now has my glass cat collection, because I'm like, this haunts you now. I don't know.
We would have been good friends. And like, I would have loved to see that. I'd have been like, where did you get it? I would have wanted to know how you kept it clean.
Lots of questions. Yeah.
I would have had so many questions.
Next time we record, I'll bring my glass cat collection. Yes.
And I'll bring my little stone dog.
Meanwhile, your classmates were like, here's some Werther's Originals for you and your grandma friends.
Yeah.
That's all I can think. I don't know. I don't know what this movie's about. Maybe there's some deeper meaning that we'll learn about in Ryan's research. I don't fucking know. I just know that the whole time I was watching it, I just kept thinking about two things. Which kid am I? And also, like, what would it be like? I grew up in a rural area with snow and, you know, the four seasons, but nothing like that. Nothing where we could have made some sort of epic snow castle. Nothing to that degree where it would have lasted too. Like, maybe you'd build sort of a snow pile or snowman, but it would have started to melt right away.
I dare say these kids didn't have that either outside of the making of this movie, but yes.
But just, you know, an area like that, like it's just beautiful and vast, and you can build this and no one's going to mess with it. And I don't know. I just thought that was really cool. So, I don't know. What's this movie about? Letterboxd, why don't you take it from here?
Well, for me, I thought this movie was about that you have to be nice to that clingy younger sibling, because eventually you're going to start a podcast with them and you're going to be stuck in this podcast for a long time.
Yeah.
So you might as well make nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, lay out rules at any point in time if you're the older
sibling.
Lay
some rules out.
Lay out some rules.
Lay some rules
That's
out.
That's all fair.
Yeah, yeah, those younger siblings need it.
They do indeed. Here's the Letterboxd synopsis. We are on Letterboxd, and so is Dirk.
Yeah,
Dirk is also on Letterboxd.
Mosey on over to Letterboxd and find me there.
Mosey, y'all. Mosey all our Canadian friends.
I typically mosey over to Letterboxd.
Yeah.
I don't like to...
Yeah.
I prefer that over sauntering over to Letterboxd.
I'm not racing. I'm not racing over there. As the cult, as the Christmas holidays begin.
Wait, I want to hear about the cult holidays.
Yeah, I was about to say cold, but it's not. Mm. Well, I mean, it would be.
Yeah.
As the Christmas holidays begin, a group of 10 war-obsessed kids have a wave of inspiration. What if they spend the next 2 weeks engaged in a simulated war, armed only with shields, wooden swords, snowballs, and a fierce sense of competition? With a bounty chest waiting for the winners, the two sides gradually grow in size, and the war grows in importance, taking over all aspects of their lives.
Hmm. One side doesn't grow.
I got the impression that this was something that it wasn't just for this Christmas break. This is seemingly like a tradition that they do every year.
They do talk about making in some kind of treehouse for the summer. Mm-hmm. So it feels like this is something they kind of do on the regular.
Yes, which begs the question. If they do this on the regular, both in the winter and in the summer, you would think that they would have some better rules. Like and I'm not trying to nitpick.
Oh.
One of them would be.
And get off the podcast. I'm here to fucking nitpick and pick this shit apart and find the loose thread and rip it until there's nothing left.
That's completely fair.
That's why people listen to movie podcasts in general. If they were like, you know what? They didn't nitpick. I'm mad. Or they're going to be like, wait, why don't they I don't want people to nitpick. I want them to dance around the actual issues of this movie.
I'll then just pick one nit.
And that would
be maybe define when the war ends.
They did. It's basically once they go back to school. That's it. That's the ending.
That's not an ending. That is a truce.
An armistice, if you will.
That's a ceasefire until the next holiday.
Correct. Should every global conflict have those kinds of rules?
We're back in school now. Everybody stop.
This is only for the summer break, and then we gotta knock this off.
No fighting on Christmas.
That's right. We do start the movie with this kid with the bugle. His name is Luke. And we start with a finding of the bugle. I thought it was interesting that we started with him waking up. We sort of assume he's our main character. He takes the bugle to show and tell. But he's not the main character, kind of. In fact, he's kind of the movie's villain in many ways.
I was so bothered by this because it starts off and it's nighttime and he goes up in the attic, which is what every kid loves to do at nighttime, is go up in the attic. And he passes a basket of hallway kittens that are never addressed again. And the rest of the movie, I'm like, what's with the hallway kittens?
Yes!
Why are they just in the hall, not in a room?
Mm-hmm.
Are they so a present? Bizarre. Are they a permanent fixture?
It doesn't make sense. And then he takes this like velvet bag to show and tell. And I was like, that's Crown Royal. He's going to be up there and being like, again, because this makes mom pretty. And then he just shows a bottle of Crown Royal. But it wasn't. It was a horn. It's just the whole beginning of this.
This is Daddy's mood juice.
Yes. But it was a horn.
Yeah, it is weird that he brings that. Anyway,
I thought it was going to be a bag of polished rocks because that's what I kept in my velvety bag as a child.
Nice.
Just
that's right.
Shiny rocks that had been polished in a rock tumbler.
If you would ask me, it was going to be dice for playing Dungeons and Dragons. But I think the answer is still the same here.
If we've learned anything, we all have our own velvet bags.
Yeah.
Ryan, what did you have in your belt?
I thought I had lube in there. You know what I mean?
Just, Ryan.
What? What?
I like you just like a dainty amount of lube. That's nice. I know that.
Like,
hey, just, I like
a velvet bag.
I like to keep it in a nice bag.
That's the worst place to keep it, a velvet bag. It's going to get all yucky on the outside.
Okay, so but we do find out that Luke is extremely into the playing of war, and he's the one who rallies all the kids and, as Mark says, has all these rules. So let's get into the rules of war.
First rule of war: we will split up into two armies who've got to stay enemies all the time. So that means any member of an army caught speaking to an enemy is a traitor.
You can't mean it.
Only insults and personal remarks are allowed.
Aren't you pushing it a little?
No. They do the same in hockey. Nobody speaks to the other team. They even put it in the contracts for the professionals. Second rule of war. Hostilities shall begin at 2 today and be terminated on the opening of school.
Hey, the war is more important than school is. I'm serious.
Third rule of war. Hostilities terminate each day after dark and resume at sunup every morning.
Do we get a lunch break?
What a dodo. Oh.
Well, he's right.
Fourth rule of war. Hostilities must not endanger any civilians. So the town is out of bounds.
Gotta stick to the woods and fields.
Shut up, Johnny.
Let me finish.
Little motor mouth.
Fifth rule of war. The war will be fought with shields, wooden swords, and snowballs. And the sixth rule of war, everyone has to bring a donation to be put in the bounty chest.
Hey, I'm not bringing that.
The army that claims victory claims the chest as it spoils.
If some people keep putting sandwiches in, bleh, I don't want to win.
Right, Jeremy, in 2 weeks those things will probably kill somebody.
You don't want them, I'll eat them.
Now, for one, the winners are going to get a box of absolute shit.
Yeah.
Their kids are not going to bring anything cool. They're not going to want to donate anything. They're going to be like, oh, it's like this gross, wet, velvety bag of lube. This is terrible.
Ew, what kid brought a bag of lube?
And two bologna sandwiches.
It was in my dad's chest in the attic that I like to go to it every single night when I'm sleeping.
Oh, God. So why does your dad keep the lube in the attic? That's the worst place he could keep it. It's too hot up there.
I was going to eat these bologna sandwiches, and now they're covered in lube. Maybe that'd keep it from the elements. I don't know.
It is a bad plan. I also thought too, like the wooden swords and shields. I'm like, well, you guys are gonna hurt each other. Like that is bad. That's a bad idea.
Not if they're all slippery from apparently all this lube that's around just everywhere.
It's true. That's true.
I don't think we're gonna be on the 4K for this kids film. We've talked too much about lube. Don't they find like a box full of slingshots that are never used? Isn't that
they find their old box? That's when they find in the barn. That was ones that they like put. I would imagine that they put away. Like let's bury these for like another time. Like almost like a time capsule. That's what I.
But not this time.
No, they didn't use them at all. Like again, much like the kittens, it never comes back. Mark and his side, of course, decide not to play. And so that therefore they have a very small group of conscientious objectors, and but then joining them is Sophie and her little sister, who are new girls in town. Sophie, and I don't know where she moved from, but she enjoys late night cross country skiing and bad boys. That's her two favorite things.
Yeah.
In order
nothing has ever been more Canada than what you said right there.
I like she always goes out at night and just skis across cross country style, and their parents are just like, "Yeah, have a good time. We don't know this area. We just moved here, but enjoy yourself."
There's one part where she skis to a point, and I won't say what it is in case we discuss this part of the film, and then she just turns right around and just skis back. Like I was just like, "That's." This is so pointless.
We will get there. Yeah. Yeah. They do, in order to have this war, they build an incredible fort. That is to say, Mark and all his small band of non-warplane pals.
It's only like three pals, right?
There's like, yeah, there's about three of them and Sophie and her sister. They build this incredible fort that has a secret hiding place for their walkie-talkies and an escape hatch. I mean, is there anything this fort did not have?
It has a fake door, which is great.
A fake door? A Trojan door, if you will?
Mm-hmm. First of all, Mark's friend who designed this thing, he decides to show them, hey, I've got this plan for this fort. And this isn't a pencil sketch. This kid did a full CAD drawing of this thing. So that's your first hint that this is going to be, you know, above and beyond your normal fort. But then he says something like, once you see this, I mean, you've never seen anything like this.
Well, he showed off at show and tell. Warren brought in the drafting tools. That was what his show and tell. He had his compass and all his drafting tools.
You know what? I forgot because I didn't give a shit. Like, you know, it's like all show and tells.
You were tuned out.
Wait till you see these glass cats, though. I'm telling you, some of these glass cats, they're pretty great. You're going to mosey on down to my glass cat collection.
Honestly can't wait to see them. I'm so excited.
Luke and the boys attack the fort, but Luke attempts to use a ladder to climb into the fort, and he falls when he's pushed back, lands in the snow, which would have hurt like hell, actually. Right?
Yeah. Well, it depends on how hard the snow's packed down. If it was soft, he's all right. But
I don't know if we've mentioned Cleo yet, but
we have not. We will get to Cleo. We're going to have a special section where we focus on Cleo.
Because there's a part through the show and tell where Mark gets up and looks out the window and sees the dog that we haven't been introduced yet. And I just thought it was Mark seeing a dog for the first time. But it turns out I think it's his dog. Am I right? Yeah,
Confusing thing of starting with Luke is because Mark is truly, I guess, our main character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If not Sophie. It's debatable. It could be Sophie. Yeah. But Mark is like kind of the main guy. And yeah, you don't know whose dog he's looking at. Only that the teacher says, Mark, sit down. And he's supposed to, and he's like, ugh. And the teacher's probably like, you always look out the window. And by the way, in the original Canadian version, his name is Pierre.
Yes. Yeah.
But in the American, but in the English version, somehow he's Mark. I don't know the hell those two. That's
they one American storming out mid movie. Pierre, this.
I mean, they could have called him Peter, but nah, they just went another direction altogether.
Everyone would have known.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever play war as kids?
Yes.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Did you? We did. We played ninja because it was the 80s. And so we made like ninja swords out of sticks with little cardboard squares over the handles. And, you know, you'd fight other kids with them, but you're mostly just afraid of getting hit. So it was, you know, when I was watching this, there was a part of me that I was an adult watching this kid's film and remembering. Oh, yeah. Sure. Like, we kind of did this stuff. So,
yeah,
we did this thing. We used to actually get into literal camos. Mm-hmm. And go down, and there was this place where it had a lot of like trees and bamboo, and we would get dropped off by our mom, and we would go down and meet friends and go play war down there. Most of which was you sneaking around trying to hide and not be found, or and find others.
Yeah, and
people had carved trails or pathways through the bamboo, which is really thick, so it was a really fun area to play that. I don't think it's there. I think it's been all developed now. Which, yes, watching this, I very much was reckoned back to the time that we used to play war. And I was like, yeah, I used to totally do all this stuff. And I was extremely jealous of this fortress that they built because I would have loved to have built something like that.
Yeah, the escape hatch part. I was like, if I was seeing this as a child, this would be my favorite part. My favorite part in Romancing the Stone is when they went down the mudslide on the hill. I was like, that's cool. That's the part that speaks to me as a kid. Like when they shot out of this thing, I was like, that's all I would do.
Yeah.
I would just be escaping the whole time that people were trying to talk to me. There goes Eric again. No, he's gone. Yeah.
Plus, they show just a brief shot when they escape the first time.
Yes.
That there's a berm down at the bottom that someone's done. Like, they've created a whole bobsled track, which they don't explore. And I was really hoping they would. Because I agree. I would have been basically like, can we stop doing the fighting for a bit so I can just ride this thing all day long?
Yeah.
I was really into like the ability to like change the flags and like put that up there. And there was a whole like, I like the area for like accessories that was like very underused or like, where they had that whole wall where it was like shelving and there was just extra stuff in there. I was like, look at that. He really thought of everything.
Yeah. When they had like, shoved drinks into the ice wall, I was like, that's forward thinking. I like where we're going with this.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. My favorite part of Romancing the Stone was the part of Danny DeVito with his cousin Ira, just always just constantly being annoyed. Those are just golden moments.
Yeah, that's true. Let's just talk about Romancing the Stone.
I'm always saying, look at them choppers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, great stuff. As a kid, I was like, boy, that's me right there.
So if we've talked too much about lube, maybe we can get on the Romancing the Stone 4K. Just kind of pivot a little bit.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. It's on you, Disney.
Mm-hmm. Or this is the spinoff, the Lube Cast.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Weave lube into everything that we watch. That's right.
We slide on into lots of topics.
Yeah, we don't weave it in. We slide it in. It glides right in.
So the boys take off from this first battle, but not before Luke looks back over his shoulder at Sophie, and the two will meet up later that night because Luke goes to the fort, and then he sees Sophie, who is again doing her cross-country skiing rounds, as Dirk mentioned earlier. She goes in a straight line towards the fort, and then we hear this.
You've come to see the fort? Did you look inside?
No, not yet. What you looking at?
Your bugle. Do you sleep with it?
Practically.
Was it a present?
It was Grandpa's. He used to come and take me on his knee and try to teach me how to play it.
I have to go now.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Got a thread hanging there.
You've got a hole in your mitten.
That's right, and they have their first kiss.
He definitely went up to Dad's attic after that.
Yeah. Let that velvet bag back out. Put something else
that
in there.
That scene is a roller coaster of emotions for me, because when she mentions the bugle and he mentions, like, my grandpa put me on his knee and tried to teach me to play it, I started to laugh because I'm imagining this grandpa being like,
yes.
Just give me a damn minute, like getting pissed and frustrated that he still can't play, like when the Saints go marching in and he's like trying to impress his grandson. But then it becomes this like awkward, sweet thing where they kiss and it's like super awkward and he's like brushing the thread that's maybe there or not. She notices his mitten and they just kiss and then it's like, okay, I gotta go. And I'm like, that's exactly how it would be if you were that age. Like, it's super awkward. I was really like riding a wave of emotions during that. Mm. Like, oh. If Grandpa was alive now, what would he say to this? He'd say,
on a bugle? On a bugle? Very versatile bugle.
Really play that bugle.
Versatile bugle playing.
Very, very versatile. Thanks for noticing.
I love that he tells this whole bugle story and she's like, cool, I gotta go.
Right, because that's what you would say. Okay, bugle story, gotta go. Like,
I don't know.
Yes.
Cool, but also, I don't know. I gotta go. I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah, because she'd just be like, all right, well, I gotta go. Like, I don't have a story as cool as that.
Yeah, sure. Well,
Ryan, you were way cooler at 11 than I was, because I would have been, that's exactly how I would have responded had I been given any amount of affection, but I doubt it because I was the girl that brought a stone dog. No one tells.
Note for this says, at night, Luke waits for Sophie to show up at the fort and they kiss. I wish the dog had stopped that.
Where's Cleo when we need her?
It's not called the dog who stopped the first kiss.
Certainly not.
I actually kind of thought this was an interesting subplot, only because it does really humanize Luke. Mm-hmm. The whole thing with the bugle kind of does in general. I know you know the difference between a bugle and a trumpet.
Do I? I don't know anymore. I don't know anymore.
I would like to remake this and have the ghost grandpa like appear after they kiss and he's playing the bugle. Like,
Ghost of Grandpa's just playing the bugle in the background.
Yeah. The knee is also a terrible place for him to try to teach him how to play a bugle.
Yeah.
On his knee. Yeah. Not knees. Yeah.
He's trying to like keep time.
One knee.
Like,
he's on one knee.
Damn it.
So Luke and the boys do eventually take over the fort. And why wouldn't they? Because the inequitable size of the two teams, like at some point they're gonna figure it out just by sheer force. And Mark and his team, they blame Sophie for not being there at the time, which is a weird way of letting her know that she's the most effective teammate they have. We couldn't do shit without you. Where were you? This is your fault. We suck.
There is a weird scene in here, too, where Luke follows them to that church. And they go in, and the kid who designed the fort is just showing one of the wise men to the other kids. And he's like, yeah, I like glued this on here. And I was like, this kid made a wise man for the church? Like,
yeah, he does it all.
Multi-talented.
Yeah, it's just brushed over. I'm like, this in the hallway kittens, it's driving me crazy. I need to know more details in this world.
Well, one of the things that you're pointing out, too, is in that scene when he's explaining the wise men, this movie, in just about every scene, has about 3 to 5 layers of dialogue happening that there's a whole other movie to watch if you just listen to what other people are saying in the background.
Yes.
Because there's so much. I understand it was overdubbed. And they probably were like, we don't have any of the, because they have none of the sound, right? Everything was done, like recorded over. And because there's a ton of kids, they keep having to like put in the background, the kids are having other dialogue, which, to be honest, it was maybe one of the things I loved about this movie, but also an incredible distraction because I'm like, wait, what are they talking about right now?
Hope I didn't miss anything important. It's really a Robert Altman kids film, if we're really being honest.
Yeah. Jeremy is completely in his own movie. He's always just like, blah, 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 with his, like, you know, going through puberty voice he's got. And it's just every, he's always talking about something different. I'm like, stay focused, Jeremy, please. But
after Sophie then goes that night, she goes to the fort, takes down Luke's team's flag, and then she goes back to Mark's, and that's when all the boys forgive her.
So I grabbed his flashlight and started back to the fort. But then I ran right into the second bus. I almost died.
What did you do?
Tried to circle them, but they were right behind me.
Incredible. And you got their flag.
You were really great.
That's not what you said before.
Just forget all that, alright? You've redeemed yourself.
Admit it, girls are better.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Lucy.
Does that mean you're willing to listen to my plan? Mark?
Don't worry. Clea will perk up. You'll see.
No food in 2 days. I'm getting worried.
She's probably just lonely.
Yeah, bring her along with us.
Yeah.
I will when I can. Now if anyone gets up to her, she growls. She's not the same dog.
She's probably just feeling old. You feel bad when you get old.
That's true.
Boy, are you right about that, little
Amen,
girl.
Amen, Lucy.
Yeah. You got that right. Beyond her years.
Got that right. But here's the thing. So let's talk about Clea.
Oh, yes.
Take this dog to the vet, okay? She's not old. She has issues. Cleo is getting a brand new doghouse that Mark is building for her because she's peeing everywhere. Mark says it's because he has a new baby brother, and that's cute. But that's not it, because it's probably a urinary tract infection, maybe a bladder stone issue. Her kidneys could be going out. Take the dog to the vet. It's not eating. It's suffering in pain. My God, what are you doing to this dog?
That would require some level of parental involvement. Yes. And as we discussed earlier.
Yes, the mom is checked out. She has a little baby. She's like, I'm out.
Mom, we got to take Cleo to the vet. We have to go. And mom's just folding a sock and going,
Yeah, to be fair, if Mark is 11, she had a baby and her other child is 11. So she's like, you know what, Mark? This shit is on you.
I'm
to grow up.
She also got when Mark was 2, they got little puppy Cleo.
Because Cleo talking was to me?
9.
Yes, Mark.
Okay.
When Mark when slash movie Pierre.
Mark. Movie Mark. Mark Pierre.
So he was 2 years old and they got this puppy Cleo when he was only 2 years old and had to raise this giant Saint Bernard with this little kid running around. She's probably like, I don't care anymore. He's 9. Mm-hmm. He had a good run. I'm not worried. Whatever happens, happens. But they really should do something about this dog. By the way, this dog was played by an actual dog named Lucy. Not a digital dog. It might blow everyone's mind. Lucy did go to the premiere of the movie. She attended the premiere, and she sat inside the theater.
Aww.
And this article that I read about it from the Montreal Gazette in 1984, in October 3rd, I think, it was the French premiere. The English version was on October 5th. But the article says that Lucy is very fond of dried liver, which is her major motivation during her poignant dramatic scenes.
Aww.
Whip out the dried liver and Lucy will follow you anywhere. So that's how they got Lucy to react.
So Cleo, like at the point where they say Cleo's peeing on everything, I was like, okay, this doesn't sound like it'll stop war, but I'm listening. And then when they say, when they say that Cleo's biting people, I was like, dude, if this movie turns into a situation where the dog's eating the kids in the fort, I'm all in on this. but it doesn't go that way.
The real Cujo situation happens.
I was like, this could happen because the dog is not, you know, looking well. But it doesn't seem to go that way. Did we already pass the part where they put paint in snowballs?
Yeah, we did. But go ahead and talk about it if you'd like.
Well, can you get stains out by putting gas on things?
You can.
Okay.
Oh.
But it's not the best solvent. It's also extremely flammable. And if you don't have
gas? Gasoline is what you mean. Gasoline is flammable? Yeah, this is news to me. Okay, this is rocking my world. You're telling me gasoline will light on fire if you put fire next to it?
What we should be telling him is, does lube catch on fire? Because I think that's a bigger concern than
gas.
Can
you just throw your velvet bag on top of the fire and snuff it out?
But also, you have to be in a well-ventilated room because it's going to make you really sick. And the other thing they don't tell you is when you get a bunch of gasoline on your skin, it really hurts.
Oh.
So it's not something to play around. Mm. Like, you think, like, oh, I got it on my hands, no big deal. One time I had to pull the fuel line off the carburetor of one of my cars, and I couldn't pinch it fast enough. And so it just kept dripping. And I was like, oh, screw it. I just have to make an adjustment. Then I'll put it back on. So I had gasoline dripping, pouring on my hands for about 2 or 3 minutes, which if it's water, you'd think, well, whatever. My hands will be wet. It was pretty amazing how quickly my hands were like dry, cracked, and burned from that just in a few minutes. So little PSA for all you people out there who want to go play with gasoline this weekend.
There goes my plans for a gasoline bath.
Back to lube bath, I guess. That's why I don't stray.
But I feel like, Dirk, you're already regretting that you asked that question.
No.
I'm sorry, what was the original question? How do we even get here?
I could count on you, Mark. I knew it because you've talked so much about vehicles and things that and they have to run on something. I don't have a car or anything, so I don't know what they do, but I knew you would know. And it really disturbed me when they were rubbing gas on each other. I was just like, this is
it's not advisable.
Unorthodox, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Well, I think it's time for things we loved and things we hated.
Okay. Now we're going to talk about the things we love and the things we hated about the dog who stopped the war. Mark, what did you love?
What I already said, one of the things I loved is the multi-layer. There's so much dialogue happening in this movie. I feel like I need to watch it again because I feel like there's three plots that are happening and you just have to listen very closely. But just to give an example, and this isn't even a great example.
Oh well.
Oh. I'm just gonna check out for a minute.
This is your show and tell.
Debbie, come and look.
Look, Johnny, they've made a trumpet into a sword.
What? Oh yeah, look at that.
There, fire's going if anyone wants to warm up.
Hey, somebody's made a pretty good fort.
Mind if I look?
Around a pretty snug little fort. Hey, look at this. They even left us some chips and a chocolate bar.
So there's a whole nother, there's something else going on in the background that I was like, wait, I was actually like, guys up front, can you shut up for a minute? I want to know what Jeremy's got going on back there.
Yeah.
But what also killed me is they do it when at the final battle, when Luke gets this group of young kids to come, he has bribed them with chocolate, mm-hmm. and they decided to just make the sound of chewing so incredibly loud. I just grabbed a quick clip.
Hey, this is fun. We should have a war more often.
Yeah.
If you can buy candy for them, why can't you buy some for us?
We're fighting this battle for glory.
Well, I'd rather be fighting for candy.
Why? That just...
No, it's like reverse ASMR. It's so yucky.
It's they really took the walla and really allowed that to take over the voice, the voice sessions. They were like, just do some chewing in the background. And then they were just like, let's put that up front. Yeah. Let's put that up top.
So far up front.
Oh, and like the conversations in the back, like amazing stuff that they recorded these kids talking about.
Yeah.
Dirk, what did you love?
Oh, God. Okay, we haven't talked about the end yet, so I won't say that part, but I will say there is a scene when they first go on break.
You love the ending? All right. Never mind.
God. Go on. Okay. So the kids are going down the street, and it was kind of in that clip that Mark just played. There's a little boy, Maxwell, who's made a tiny fort, the kind of snow fort I think we've all made. It's about half a foot tall. And the other kids go over and just bash the shit out of his fort.
Yep.
And they go, you call this a fort? And I died laughing. I was like, they are clowning on him. And the mom, she's just like, hey, don't do that. And it made me so happy. Poor
from
Maxwell.
Inside the house. Like the parents are like almost straight from like a Peanuts cartoon. Like they're barely, they are just in the background for the most part. The exception of Sophie's mom and Mark's mom. I think we don't really see many other parents whatsoever.
Yeah. No.
Erica, what is something you loved?
First of all, I love that there were twins featured. Love a good twin. Mm-hmm. That was very fun.
A toonie.
Yeah. And I really love the character. And Ryan, remind me of his name. Was it Nick? Who is just off in the woods for fun, feeding squirrels.
Nicky the Loon.
I love Nicky the Loon. He just did his own thing. He didn't get involved in the war, but he pulls a prank later to try to end it. Really liked the inclusion of him because also, again, watching this movie thinking like, which character am I? It was like, you always knew a kid like that. That was just like around that everybody knew them, but they weren't like in a particular friend group, but they were always kind of in the perimeter or they would like show up at parties or whatever and kind of dip in and out. He was that kid.
Yeah.
He's also the one that walks away and you hear actual war sounds.
Yeah. What was going on with that?
It's so wild. It's like, I don't know.
And he's the one who has his cousin come and the cousin that.
You mean Danny Marshall from Victoriaville?
Oh, love that. That's how he introduced himself.
He also, that is a girl's voice. Who's dubbing him, right? Like, it is a girl's voice.
It's gotta be.
And that hat, I was like, oh, this is a girl. Because I was like, it's clearly a girl's voice. And they did him dirty on the English dub. And that's all I could say.
I thought he was adorable. I love the voice. Because he has that little, like, he just, like, Campbell Soup face.
Cherubic
where he's, like,
face,
just, like, a little smushy guy. But I want to introduce myself that way going forward. Just be like, hello, I'm Erica Van Nuys.
Hello.
Proud to make your acquaintance.
Something I loved. Now, this came up last month in September because we finally got
a weird link that you're making between these films.
Oh, dear.
So, no, I'm not even going to go there. But we had a theme song pop up, if you will, with they're playing with fire. There's actually a theme song. And it was a while since we've had a theme song. And I love movies from the 80s, how they always had like a theme song. This sort of has a theme song. Not quite, but sort of. It does have a song written specifically for the movie. Guys, if only the oldest profession had a theme song. Boy, it was from the wrong era. It wasn't from the 80s. Mm. But boy, imagine that song. Imagine that song. In six different parts. Anyway, this is the somewhat theme song of this movie.
Goodbye, oh wonderland. Farewell, oh happy band. Sad to say, it's time for home. The snow is melting fast, though nothing past. There are joys we have known. Let's leave the battle as friends. The game is over, just take my hand. And love is on our side, no one can take our love away. For now the new year has to start, for love is on our side.
Oh, that's right. Natalie Simard with Love is on Our Side, or...
L'amour à présentance.
Which I believe she sings a French version in the French version. I believe. I stuck only to the English version for reasons we'll get into. But, yeah. I mean, that song is very 80s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That
yeah.
chorus yeah. is so 80s. Oh, my gosh. So I always love, like, for a movie like this, that they're like, we only have so much money. We have... But we got to put some money aside to get a song. You got to have a song.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I love that. I love that about 80s movies. Yeah. And that's what I loved about this. Let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what is something you hated?
You cannot convince me that the kids did anything less than an absolute shit job of cleaning up after that fort fell down.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they even cleaned up. I think they took their shit and left it.
The camera kind of panned back and you see them leaving. I'm like, I'm imagining the poor farmer or whatever who owns that land walking up there and being like, motherfucker, you guys couldn't have cleaned this?
He can commiserate with the guy that owns the barn and be like, these kids are driving me insane.
I'm with you. I'm with you, Carl. I'm with you. But do you smell something weird in this barn?
Yeah, other what than gas? Is that smell?
This barn stinks. I don't get it.
It smells like rotten sandwiches and like... God, I don't know. Just a wet pasta?
I don't want to sound like a perv, but there's a lube smell in my barn.
Yeah. Yeah. It, you know that smell.
No, you know that smell.
You know that smell. Dirk, what did you hate?
Well, I loved that they also introduced the bear trap thing. Nikki the Loon finds this bear trap. And then I thought, oh my God, is a kid going to get stuck in the bear trap? And that stops the war. And I was like, that doesn't involve a dog. Then I was like, oh my God, does Cleo get stuck in the bear trap? Mm-hmm. And I hated that they didn't do anything with the bear trap except for this weird part where Nikki's whole joke is to make everyone come over to where Nikki is. And then he's like, that's it. Let's get back to the war. I hated that part so much because my brain wanted the bear trap to maul somebody. If the Cleo wasn't going to do it, it just needed something to happen. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's it. It's a small nit to pick, if you will.
It is a fox trap though, right, Mark? You mentioned it. It's a fox trap, not a bear trap, but it's very similar. It looks similar to it.
Guys, save that for the semantic.
Yeah. The semantic. Please. I just want you to have fodder. Please. I'm just Mark. You have need fodder for your side podcast, the semantic cast.
But I agree with you outside of getting bear traps and fox traps confused. I agree that I was waiting for...
Well, in Portland, we don't have a lot of education on the animal traps, so...
Well, it's okay. I mean, you should just know it anyway. But I think for me, I spent the whole time... That whole scene is like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
At least it felt like it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has no fucking point.
No.
There's no point to that scene at all. I thought originally it was to try to lure Luke's team over so they could take back over but that wasn't the case at all. Yeah. It was just
It's just his villain origin story.
It sounds like during that scene we were all giving it more credit than it deserved because we're all like thinking, oh, maybe he's doing this, maybe he's doing that. He's not doing anything other than this is the joke. In fact, he instantly gives up and tells his cousin to tell everyone slowly around the circle that it is a joke and it was all for nothing, which is very much like kids would do. They would spoil that, but
but not one of them was like, what the fuck? Like they were all just like, oh, okay, let's go back to like what?
Yeah.
You wasted everyone's time. Nikki the Loon, you were like a hero in the film. And now I'm like, what's this guy's deal? Is that why they leave him out in the woods by himself? Cause he doesn't
seriously
get comedy. Yeah. I don't know.
Your pranks suck, Loon. Your pranks are shit.
Always have been, always will be. God damn it.
Yeah.
Hey, Erica, what did you hate?
I hated the ending.
Sure.
I hated sure. it. I sure. know we're not going into it yet, but I hated it.
It is important. That I think if you're going to watch this movie, I don't think we should spoil the ending. The ending, maybe we have. Maybe it's too late.
I don't think we can't not.
Yeah, but, I think we should yeah. spoil it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. then we'll skip over this part and we'll talk about.
Unless someone's ending. Watching it on YouTube or renting it from Rybusters, then, you know, how else are they watching this?
Yeah. Very true.
Well, they can buy their own version of the Blu-ray. They don't have to just come to Rybusters. TV2B's
too fucking scared to show it. Mm-hmm. You wimps.
Maybe 2B2B Canada has it. I don't know. But
2B2B? 2B? 2B? That's what they call it.
Yeah, they just do it as a question. They're sort of like wondering, is this where I am? That's how they say it.
2B or not 2B? Is that what they're doing?
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Thank you.
I didn't even like that.
I think I hated the same thing, Dirk. That same scene. It's really one of the only. I will say this about the movie: it is pretty much like it all builds pretty well, and it kind of gets mm-hmm. right into what's happening. It sets the rules. It gets us into these characters. There's maybe too many characters is another thing. There's just too many kids to keep track mm-hmm. of. But that scene really just kind of goes nowhere, and it's just kind of like I guess it just gave that kid a bit more if you're into that, or maybe that was a thing that Canadian kids did a lot, especially if they were in rural areas and they kind of just messed around. So maybe that two small town kids in Quebec, that's a great scene. But it, to me, just felt like, what are we doing here? What is this about?
Yeah, I think if we take those 10 minutes and we move it to the front of the film and have people spend more time with Cleo, because we only see Cleo have to retrieve groceries with a wagon. You know, we don't really get... So when it builds, if we're building to the dog stopping the war, then give us some more Cleo. Like, you know, some...
Yeah,
some,
yeah.
That's what I... Better use of time, I would say.
I agree. Well, let's go to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
I really love that chewing scene. I know it's short, but it's just...
Mm-hmm.
It is a scene, and this doesn't happen a lot in the movies you watch, but that was a scene that I rewound and watched three times because I was just so enamored with moving them, just mixing the chewing right up to the front. You know, I sure. really appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Someone moved that pot up and was like, now we got it. So I think another thing, I don't know if maybe you're not a favorite scene, but I really love the scene where they all got to show each other their Christmas presents. Like, wasn't it Christmas time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What happened with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really glossed over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Because that was a break from the action. So they said, who cares? Right.
They're like, they cut that out, but left the fox trap scene. So go figure.
Erica, your favorite scene?
Oh, I, oddly enough, really liked the scene in the church. It was so random. Mm-hmm. And seeing them go in there and then having, you know, we kind of touched on it, having the little boy who was the architect of the snow fort then go into great detail on a figurine that he had made for the nativity set. But what I really liked about it was the whole movie, at least the version we watched, is dubbed in English. But then they're singing O Little Town of Bethlehem in French.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I kind of like this. Like,
they left some audio from the original.
They left some audio, and it was just, you know, fun to hear that song that I've heard many, many times, but hear it in French and be like, oh, I know this one. So
it would be funny if they'd redubbed it and they were like, oh, little town of Bethlehem. And they're like, that's not, that's two different songs.
That's not how it goes at all.
Oh, little town of Bethlehem.
Don't say the B word. Don't say the B word.
Dirk, what was your favorite scene?
The end.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. That's
what I thought you were going to say. Okay. So the ending. So we're here. We're going to talk about the ending. Why was it your favorite scene?
Well, we should say, out of respect for people, because I know people are very sensitive about dog deaths in movies, that this movie does involve a dog death. I would hate for someone to watch this and, you know, because I understand, I've heard from people over the years that it's a big trigger.
It's
never been an issue for me. So when they unearth the crushed dog head from the snow, and it's like dramatic. This dog has expired, and it might have just died of old age. We're not quite sure because she wasn't doing well, but it's dead. And then it cuts to the twins, and they're wearing basketballs that they and they're wearing it as helmets. And it is the funniest thing to follow a dramatic death.
Yes.
I rewound it 3 or 4 times because it is back to back with, like, because you don't think they're going to show it. They've implied something unfortunate has happened. And I go, this is a kid's movie. So when they show the face of the dog and then cut to the basketball hats, it was over for me. I was like, 10 out of 10, whoever edited this, chef's kiss for you not showing somebody's tear rolling down their eye. It's just
anything. Memories, a flashback of getting the dog as a puppy. Nope.
No.
Just basketball helmets.
Basketball helmets. And did I take a picture of it that I'll keep on my phone forever? Yeah, those two twins in basketballs is, I might print it out and put it on a desk. That is, take the hat off, you know? Be respectful, Cleo. But no, that's mine.
Well, let's get into final questions. These are our final questions for the dog who stopped the war. How many kids saw this and decided they would build their own fort with wood and snow?
Oh, I would have 100%.
Every single kid that saw it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
They were popped up all over Quebec after
and thinking about how they could dig out like a little escape, you know, hatch and walkie-talkies. Yeah, hell
that
yeah.
escape hatch was so awesome. What a great idea that was. Mm-hmm. That was,
the bar had been raised and every kid was like, oh, I can fucking do that.
Yeah.
Not only that, but like when Sophie escapes through that escape hatch, she pushes first through like a cardboard box of just pre-made snowballs, like perfectly packed snowballs. Which I was like, oh man, that's awesome. Like every kid looked at that. And there's probably like, you know, there's a fake top to it. And then they just kind of put like maybe a dozen ones on top. It looked like a giant whole bin of them, but like.
Oh, I'll ruin it. Oh, fuck, really?
Movie spoilers. Making. Yeah. Sorry, Jesus, right? Sorry. Yeah. Sorry.
God. But every kid, bottomless.
Every kid sees that box of snowballs and was like, oh my God, that's so,
so many,
many
snowballs.
We could have such an incredible, I mean, it's just neat in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And then she gets in a box and then slides out and they don't, that was a very cool scene. Cause you're just like, that is smart. And that is like, how do you escape from that? It was a cool thing.
Yeah. It would have been great if instead of the basket of snowballs, that's when the kittens came back. She just grabbed that basket and then slid them down the hill.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been a clutch move.
Or they bring out those slingshots and they're just slingshotting kittens towards people.
Yeah.
The basket of kittens who stopped the war.
Cuter.
Who moves right before the holidays?
Someone that's going into witness protection.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
There we go.
Someone who doesn't mind if you pour a ton of bleach into the washer. It's like, I don't care. Oh, I don't care. Because I got some evidence in there. You knock that out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So did Mark's mom send him to the store? Like, hey, get some eggs, milk, bread, and a shit ton of popcorn.
Yes.
Get the biggest,
hugest
bag of popcorn.
A giant dog, an 11-year-old, and a baby. She's like, get whatever the fuck you want as long as you come back with eggs, milk, and bread, all right? I don't give a shit. Get whatever you want for lunch. And he was like, fucking popcorn. I'm getting popcorn. I'm eating popcorn for lunch. Like, he was just like, that's it.
Yep, yep. The actors who played the kids have said in the documentary that they would all be recognized constantly wherever they went throughout their lives. Now, say you had to pick the kid who fakes his foot caught in the fox trap out of the rest of the cast.
Mm-hmm. No, I can't.
Could
do
you?
It.
Could
no.
you?
Yeah, because he has those big teeth.
Oh, I could not.
I got him.
You got him.
I got him.
I couldn't. I would have been like, I don't know.
Jeremy. Jeremy's the only one that stands out because he's like 10 years older.
Yeah, he's much bigger. He's advanced. What's funny is that when they're all adults, everyone caught up to him. So he doesn't look like much bigger than the rest of the kids. But yeah. And the two leads look exactly the same.
And the twins, if they were side by side.
But you would know, you would could eliminate two because you were like, well, those are the twins. I know those two are not this kid. But I'm just saying they look very similar. A lot of the kids look kind of samey is what I'm trying to say.
Did the dog also get recognized all the time?
That went to the premiere. Mark, did you hear that from earlier? Yeah. Hell yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right.
Lucy was hot shit in Hollywood or Canada Hollywood.
Yeah. Quebec Hollywood. Now, like we said about this dog, it's very sad what happens. But considering her medical needs that are being ignored.
Ask this question.
What's the over under on her lasting to the next winter if this had ended differently?
I'm not answering this.
Mark?
She's 9, right?
Yeah.
The average lifespan of a St. Bernard is 8 to 10 years.
In Canadian years, too?
Yeah, so that's 12 to 14 years.
So she's actually outlived. She's outlived her Canadian lifespan.
Yeah. She died of a broken heart.
She should have died 2 years ago in Canada years.
Okay.
She died of a broken heart because she was there when Mark was a baby and she watched him grow up. And now a new baby is here and she's ready to watch her grow up. And the mom is like, get outside. She died of a broken heart.
But also there's like legit.
She's also the clock is ticking on her right now.
Yeah. I mean, she also died of a urinary tract infection that gave her sepsis. But before that, she died of a broken heart.
Right. We all know that. Like, that's what the veterinarian's going to say. But also in addition to a broken heart, let's just also mention the actual medical facts that your family ignored. Yeah. Mark's family, Mark Pierre. What do the kids do once basketball season picks up again? Seemed like a cool idea at the time to turn those into hats. But now it's time to play ball, kids. What are we going to do now?
I think they're screwed.
Okay, yeah. So...
Because those basketballs are certainly sitting still up on that hill. Because no one's gone to fucking pick them up.
No. Mm-hmm. So this, I'm going to use a little visual aid, which listeners can't see, but this, I just want you guys to pick, what's your favorite Quebec kid fashion? Is it hat on hat? Is it cat mask? Or is it upside down trash can on head?
I mean, if I'm going for safety and also visibility, I'm picking trash can.
Okay.
Yeah, I definitely put a spaghetti strain on my head more than once as a kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But this one is like not a spaghetti strainer. That's a giant one. That is just like a netted basket, like trash can. Like that's like a big.
I'm tired of being corrected on this podcast.
Let's correct you on your opinion.
Fair enough. I'm just saying, this better be some thick pasta because stuff's coming out the sides here, Dirk. Be real careful when you're straining pasta.
Oh, he is. And he's making some thick ass pasta.
Yeah, that's his bow tie pasta strainer, Ryan. Yeah. Everyone knows that.
Look,
he has one for bow tie and one for angel hair. Just calm down.
Those little kittens you have in a basket in the corner of your stairwell, they're going to run down and grab some of those loose pastas that have hit the floor. Okay? Mark, what's your favorite? What's your favorite fashion?
Is there like a dog face in there? It's hard for me to tell.
Yeah, it looks like a cat. I thought it was a cat face. I wasn't sure. It looks like a cat face.
I'm going
with
cat
face. Like Halloween masks.
I'm going straight
to that war too. So I feel like, Mark, you're wearing Halloween mask.
Yeah, for sure.
You're running up there in like a Halloween mask.
Now, is there something?
Let me just tell you what you're going to pick.
Yeah, thank you.
Provide your opinion, and then I will tell you what is actually going to happen.
And Dirk, that is not a pasta strainer. Okay, is everyone clear on their opinions?
God damn it!
And Ryan's running up to the war with lube all over his face.
You won't catch him. You can't. It slips right out of your hands. Slides on his belly
the
down.
Snowballs are just gliding right off his face.
Speaking of snowballs, is there something to the Canadian snow that makes the snowballs sound like they are bullets?
Can I add an additional thing that I hated? I hated the weird, goofy sound effects at the end. In the
It was to soften the war, I'm sure. That was the note. Like, let's not make this too intense. But it's
like,
it's definitely...
enjoy that.
Yeah.
I did not enjoy that.
But is there something to the snow?
I love the idea of someone seeing the kids ineffectively throwing snowballs, and they're like, we're going to have to soften this up with some sound effects. This is pretty intense, you guys.
Yeah. This is tough
Or
stuff.
Was it so intense that was the only way they... Wait, is that what you just said?
Yeah, that is. That. Yeah, never mind. That was it. That
I'm tired of nobody listening to me on this podcast.
Their listening skills are at 0% right now.
Our ears are filled with lube. We do not understand how to use lube.
Filled my ears with lube.
I'm trying to get my ears all loose, and I don't understand. I don't know what lube is used for. What do you think made the fort collapse? Poor construction? Uneven weight distribution? Or was it Warren's little brother digging at it with a shovel?
I thought they implied it was Warren's little brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was what was implied.
Because Warren's little brother has probably seen the plans, so he knows the weak area of... He was really... It was like a double fuck you to his brother, because he was like, fuck you, I'm going to get into the fort, but also fuck you, because I am going to out you for, you know, your poor construction.
I'm going to go straight to the other team, get all the free candy, and then ruin your design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because on page 2 of the plans was the Death Star weakness point, and he started digging immediately right at that.
Noted.
Yeah, because this was that era, so he made these really elaborate plans for an 11-year-old, but also pointed out the weakest part.
Careful of this part.
Yeah.
And he did it with a little flashing red light that was like, this is the weakest part right here on the plan.
Hit this.
As long as we keep that from being shoveled, we're good.
Yeah.
We're good. Yeah.
But if somebody takes the smallest shovel, a trowel, if you will, and goes after that part, we are screwed. Mm-hmm. Just saying. Mm-hmm. But just, we won't have to worry about it because that'll never happen.
Just no matter what, don't store your dogs under that part.
Right. By the way, I've made a perfect little cubbyhole for a dog right in the weakest part of this entire fort.
Yeah.
Dogs would love it if they were out here.
Yeah, but let's not do that. Let's just not do that, and then we avoid all this.
I know we're done with final questions, but would another...
Well, we are now.
Would a terrible alternative ending be that... Warren's little brother was under there when it fell.
Oh, yeah. Was that the original ending?
The little brother that stopped the war, and then he got crushed under there?
He got crushed under there, and they were all like, oh, no.
Also,
but then Luke got off the bugle and started playing, and everyone was like, oh. And Grandpa's ghost came and was like, good plan.
His ghost goes into the boy, and now Grandpa's back.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And the little boy, there's that second little boy death, because now it's just Grandpa, and he won't share. He's like, I have a young man's body now. Look at me.
It's like 18 again, or six again. Would they then bury his brother in the barn?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where else?
Yep.
Yeah, but they don't know that's a pet cemetery, so then that becomes bad.
Knocking on the door late at night. There's Warren's brother.
Why do you smell like barn lube?
He's just drenched in lube. And alive again. This is a wild barn. All right. Let's discuss some research. This was made for under $1 million.
Oh.
And it was shot in a small town called Bas-Saint-Paul, east of Quebec City. And it was the first, as I said, of the Tales for All. Shooting right after this is shooting in, I think it shot in September of 1983. And right after that, they shoot the fantasy comedy Michael's Fright in Montreal. coming in August, September the following year, that Michael's Fright is The Peanut Butter Solution.
That's
the original title. The original title.
So wait, they filmed this in September? There was that much snow in September?
I may be wrong about the date, so don't trust me on that one. So maybe I'm off on the date there.
Ryan's research is a lie. Got it.
This opens, however, this is not a lie. This opens October 1984 in Quebec, and it was a huge success, grossing more than $1 million in Quebec, so making their money back plus. Then they have a VHS release, like one of the earliest, I have to assume, which followed in January of 1985, where the VHS tape was reportedly, according to an article I found, was more popular than Star Wars, at least in Quebec.
What? No.
Dang.
No in Quebec. Way. In Quebec. March 1985, the film makes its English Canada debut. They had done the premiere, as I mentioned before, where they had Lucy, a.k.a. Cleo, there in October the previous year. But this was where it really came out. And that's where it also found success. According to the Vancouver Sun, they said it grossed $16,700 in its first week and $46,000 its second. So word of mouth did even better.
No.
Then 30 countries have bid for television rights, and a screening in New York got even more people involved. It's true. It's true, Derek.
That's wild.
Yeah. Huge. That's what I'm saying. This is a giant success in Canada. And then Roch Demers, the producer, told Vancouver Sun, he said, "The response has been fantastic. I was sure that people who saw it would love it, but I never thought it would reach this proportion. It's a great start to the series." And then at the 1985 Genie Awards, which is the Canadian Oscars, this is nominated several times. Now, that said, so was Reno on the Dock that particular year. So, I mean, you know, this is just Canadian films. But it does win Best Editing, and it wins...
My favorite thing was that editing with the dead dog in the basketball
ads. Yes, 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 yes.
I hope they won.
They did. They won Best Editing and the Golden Reel, which is a special award given to the highest grossing film of the year.
Did it win more awards than Night Zoo?
Oh my God.
No.
Are we still talking about Night Zoo?
Now, Night Zoo is not nominated this year, okay? But it's a different year.
I'm just
but
saying,
no.
In general.
I don't know if they got more nominations.
What a double feature that would be. Night Zoo and the dog that stopped the war.
Well,
free tissues and even more free lube.
Similar endings. Let's just say that. I mean, do you start with the dog that started the war and then end on Night Zoo? Because man,
either one.
Boy, that cold night air is going to feel extra cold as soon as you walk outside. Anyway, this is released in the United Kingdom by New World Video, which is how we're talking about this movie, on January 28th, 1988. Another New World Video selection in the UK at that point in time was Omega Syndrome. This and Omega Syndrome. Two films that fit well together and are well overdue at that point to hit UK video. I mean, come on, guys. Where have you been? They were like, finally, these two movies from America and Canada have come. Anyway, there is a sequel to this of sorts. Co-writer Roger Canton directed a summertime version in 2001 called The Hidden Fortress. Not the Hidden Fortress movie that inspired Star Wars. It was directed by Kurosawa, but no, a different 2001 Hidden Fortress. Also part of the Tales for All series. Now, Canton insists on the Blu-ray. He says it is not a sequel, but apparently some of the kids in this are the adult characters from Dog Who Stopped the War, or the kids' characters in the Dog Who Stopped the War are adults in the Hidden Fortress, and their kids are now doing this fortress. So how is this not a sequel? I don't know. But anyway, he says it's not. Sounds like a sequel, but I guess it's not exactly. Also, it's just summertime, so they build a giant, you know, it's all summer action, but they still fight in
which
a war.
They say that they were going to do in this movie too.
Yeah, so. Which they set up in this movie. So feels like a sequel. But anyway, however, what is a sequel, or at least a remake, is 2015's Snowtime. a animated version of this movie where in, yes, the dog still dies at the end. So we didn't change that for the animated version. That movie is so popular that it was followed by an animated series called Snow Snaps. And then a 2018 sequel called Race Time.
Wow. That was unexpected.
So this movie is very popular in Canada. Very popular. Like I said, the Goonies of Canada.
Please tell me that New World Pictures had nothing to do with those sequels.
They did not. Well, 2015, they were well out of it. 2001, they're well out of it for the Hidden Fortress. They're well out of it. We only got
again.
The dog who stopped the war. But is the Hidden Fortress a nearly new world? I mean,
nope. It is
couldn't
not.
Possibly
not
be.
Even a sequel. Nope.
No way. Definitely not.
Dirk, your final thoughts on the dog who stopped the war.
Oh, man. This yet another amazing film you've invited me to be on your podcast and talk about. It's no zombie nightmare, but it's, you know.
Few things are.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this film. I didn't expect to when it started. I was like, okay. But the music rocks. It's so good. That ending song is fantastic. It's really kind of, even though I wasn't liking this Luke character, because I don't think they could decide if he was a villain or a good kid, or they were just writing a very complex child. I don't know. But
yeah.
It was really fun. And I got some great chuckles out of it from Maxwell and the basketball helmets. I just, you know, thank you so much for having me on to talk about this.
Well, thank you for being here, Dirk. Yes, that is it for us and the dog who stopped the war. We love to have he's gone. We love having Dirk on the show, especially when we're talking about things Canadian. I forgot Zombie Nightmare, also Canadian. So we love having you on talking Canadian stuff. Now tell everybody where they can find your podcast, the VHS podcast.
Oh my gosh. It's everywhere. I think now where podcasts can be. My wife put me on all kinds of weird platforms in like South Africa and things that she's found. So fingers crossed that people in South Africa are enjoying our Faust Love of the Damned episode that you were kind enough to be a guest on.
Yes.
We've got Rockadoodle, an episode on Rockadoodle coming up with an animator who worked on that film when he was 17. We have, I'm very excited about this one. And this will be out probably the same week that this episode drops, or it'll already come out. But
okay.
I was listening to a podcast, and the comedian Sean O'Connor was on there. And he's a joke writer for a lot of late night TV shows and things like My Friend Ian. And he's a very, very funny writer. But when Conan O'Brien had his, he got the Mark Twain Award. And during that award ceremony, or show, they had characters from the Conan O'Brien show come up. One of them is the masturbating bear, which, you know, wears a diaper and it moves around in a way that can't really show masturbating because it was on TV and whatnot. Well, this guy was in that suit. And so I was like, maybe he wants to talk about bear movies from the point of view of a masturbating bear. So I reached out to this person and their game. So we are going to record an episode
on the film
Cocaine Bear with a man who portrayed a masturbating bear. So
amazing.
That's the
I'm
kind
surprised
of
you didn't go after your favorite kids movie with the bear kid in the, or there's somebody in a bear costume. You put the picture out all the time.
Oh, Gooby?
Gooby.
Okay. So I did put Gooby up as an option, but he went with Cocaine Bear. So
Fair enough.
No one's ever going to choose Gooby. And that's perfect.
It's a kid's film, right?
It is a children's film. Yeah.
All right. I'll be there.
I don't think it's not Canadian though. So I don't know if we have two things that these.
That's not your podcast. Though.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, please check out VHS. It's a great podcast. Mm-hmm. And I don't say that just because I am occasionally on it, but it is a great podcast because it is a great podcast and you should be checking that out. Check out everything that Dirk is working on because there's also other podcasts that you are producing now.
Check out the Joy of Cooking podcast. We actually just recorded an episode today before this podcast. I was like racing to get this done. And
And I gotta talk when the dog stopped the war, so could you hurry up with this recipe?
All right. But it's a really fun podcast my wife and I are producing, and we, you know, wanted to design something that we weren't the hosts of, that was really about putting people like the hosts are part of the oldest running American cookbook. It's been around forever, and they're in charge of, you know, maintaining this. And so we created it so people are sitting at the table with them. They're talking about food, but it's not in a heady way. So they'll talk about everything from, you know, old recipes and eating stuff at gas stations to like some new, you know, upscale food in the same conversation. So it's, I really enjoy it. I'm very proud of what they've created, and it's far more popular than anything I've done. So, that's cool. So check out Joy of Cooking Podcast if you can share it. You know what? Subscribe your parents on their phone so they were like, where'd this come from? And they won't know how to get rid of it. Just do that.
I don't even know what podcasts are. So check out the Joy of Cooking. Check out VHS. Check out our episodes. You want to follow the rest of Vidtober Toonie, go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where you can find all of our episodes. And we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.